Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Basketball is back, and so are we. Hello, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you again. Phil, have you been avoiding the Rona?
So far, so good. I mean, despite my wife's best efforts to bring it home with her from the hospital, I think we're doing okay right now.
I hope you guys are all safe and healthy as well. So haven't checked in with you guys for a while, but we have some things to go over in today's show. We're going to talk about the Marquette University team in a minute, but what we're going to talk about first is basketball is coming back. The TBT, the basketball tournament, is going to happen. It's going to start next week, I guess. And we have a special guest we're going to bring on here in just a minute, the coach of the Golden Eagles alumni squad, former Marquette player Joe Chapman. And Phil, I am looking forward to the TBT for no other reason. It's sports, first of all. And I look forward to it every year anyway because it's a way, you know, we get to see some of our favorite Marquette players of the past who we haven't seen play. You know, they're not in the NBA, but they're playing overseas or playing elsewhere. And it's just fun to see them again. And I'm glad they're going to attempt to have this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's be honest. We would, even without all the things going on, we would be pretty excited about this. Maybe we wouldn't be setting our calendars to watch it on television with such enthusiasm as we are now. But, I mean, Marquette crowd loves cheering for a team that competes and wins a lot. And this TBT team, the Golden Eagles alumni have been, you know, they have been competitive in winning a lot of games in this tournament. So it's a fun thing to watch. So I am looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, I mean, they got all the way to the championship last year and almost were able to split $2 million before they fell to the Ohio State alumni squad, Carmen's crew. They're back in it this year. But the tournament, if you haven't been paying attention, it's going to be a little different this year. I think in the past they've had as many as 64 teams in this thing. It's down to just 24 this year. And they're going to do it kind of in a bubble setting. They're going to do it in Columbus, Ohio. A lot of guys on this team that you would recognize, I mean, pretty almost all of them are Marquette alums. Luke Fisher joins the team this year, but a lot of guys who have played on this team in the past, Mo Acker, Dwight Bikes is back, Darius Johnson Odom is back after he played on another team last year, Travis Diener is playing in this thing again, Andrew Rousey, Jamil Wilson is back, Derek Wilson is back. So it's, I think it's a balanced roster, and it's a good looking squad, and they are the four seed in this tournament, so they are one of the teams that people think can win the whole thing.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of there's a lot of talent on the roster, and I think one of the key things is that the roster core has by and large been the same, right? Especially in this day and age, or I shouldn't say this day and age, but in this era, right, in the coronavirus era, where teams aren't necessarily playing pickup and getting a lot of time to gel.
Right.
With the compressed tournament, I think having a team that's been there, done that a number of times is going to be a huge advantage for the Golden Eagles alumni that some of the other teams won't have.
Elgin Cook has been great for this team the past couple of years. He's back. They just have so much depth and so much talent on this team. So I think I really like it. And this is something I'm going to ask Joe about coming up in just a minute. But I think, I don't know about everyone else, but I'm kind of looking at this as just like a little preview of what a bubble concept looks like. Obviously, the NBA is going to be doing it for like 3 months. NHL, too, is going to be doing it for quite a while, if you know, whenever they fire back up. You know, this is only 10 days. So, I mean, conceivably, if you are exposed to the virus, you may not even show symptoms until the tournament's over. But that being said, it is just a little look at, you know, can this idea work? And I know the tournament is taking every precaution to make it work, but still, to me, it's kind of a preview of what a league in a bubble concept could look like.
Yeah, well, I think you're spot on. I mean, people who listen to this podcast may not also follow professional women's soccer in the U.S., but I did just see a thing that the women's soccer, the NSWL, I think it is, was supposed to have a challenge tournament, and one of the teams, the Orlando Pride, had to pull out of the tournament because some of the younger players on the team, despite the orders of the quote-unquote bubble, went out partying at nightclubs and bars. And this is not an old man yells at clouds kind of scenario. But
right.
The moral of the story was, turns out they got coronavirus at the clubs, and they're no longer able to participate. So to your point, I think this will prove the concept, right? Can players voluntarily quarantine, keep themselves and their teammates safe to enable the tournament to go on? Short time window, but I think it's a useful data point.
Yeah, I think so too. And hopefully it goes well. And we're going to talk to Joe about that. We're going to toss to our interview with Joe Chapman right now. So here is our interview with the head coach of the Golden Eagles alumni squad, Joe Chapman.
All right, the coach of the Golden Eagles alumni squad for the TBT basketball tournament, Joe Chapman, joins us now. Hey, Joe, good to see you, man. How have things been going?
Oh, pretty good. Just happy to get going. Got, you know, some of the guys here now just starting to come in. So, you know, just happy to be here.
How did this kind of come together this year, given the challenges of the coronavirus pandemic and probably not even sure up until a few weeks ago this thing was even going to happen? How did it all come together? How were you guys able to organize?
Well, we knew guys were motivated to play from the previous years, and so it wasn't hard to pull on to ask the guys, hey, you want to play? You know, I didn't have to, you know, try too hard. And me and Dan Fitzgerald and Travis Diener, we all kind of talked and, you know, wanted to make sure if we're going to do it, we do it the right way. Obviously, with the whole pandemic going on, we wanted to make sure that guys are safe. And that's the number one thing for us is we want to bring sports back, but in a safe way.
So how does that work logistically? You said folks are coming in now. Are you guys getting in practices ahead of the tournament?
Yeah.
Are you guys kind of quarantining for that?
Yeah. So we're just starting a training camp coming up this week. We have guys fly in. We take a couple tests. TBT gives us a test before we go. So guys do their tests, see who's negative, positive, and then we start our training camp.
Yeah, I kind of want to follow up on that, just because that's something that's probably on everybody's mind. Is, you know, I think a lot of sports fans are kind of looking at the TBT as maybe just a little appetizer, a little preview, because the NBA is going to do a bubble. NHL is probably going to do a bubble. If you guys could go 10 days without incident, that'd be really good. Now, obviously, the NBA is going to go like 3 months. But still, from your perspective, how comfortable are you and your team as far as the precautions being taken and what, you know, the TBT is going to be doing to make sure this thing happens safely?
Yeah, everyone's, you know, pretty much on board. The hardest part for all of us with families was, you know, staying in a hotel for, you know, up to 14, 16 days. You know, that's not, you know, ideal for any of us to be in a hotel that long. But at the same token, we know that we represent, you know, more than just ourselves, and we represent our families, and we represent a university. And we want to go about it the right way. And TBT has done a great job of daily testing, but also, you know, testing. They give us questionnaires every day of how you're feeling and stuff like that. So they've done a good job of trying to prepare the best they could of the outcome of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, so like as you guys get into training camp, you're going to have some new faces, not necessarily new to TBT, but new to the team. You got Darius Johnson Odom, you know, coming back to the good side, the light side, as opposed to the dark side of the force, so to speak. How do you imagine the new team the team coming together in training camp, and you know, you got Mr. Elam ending himself and Travis Diener coming back, and how do you see the team forming over the training?
Camp? I think pretty well. I think for me as a coach, you want to put the pieces together. But it's going to be up to the guys to kind of buy into the system and their role. And like I said, it's something that's bigger than us. And I think guys are in a point of their career that they kind of understand it's not about them per se anymore, but it's about the bigger picture. So having DJO back is huge for us because he played a couple years ago. We went to the Elite Eight and lost to Ohio State. That was the last time he played. That was my last year of playing too. So it's good to have him back in the fold because he's a dynamic scorer. But what people don't realize, he's also a great defender when he wants to be. I think that's the thing about us is we're going to, you know, blend his talent well because he's a lockdown defender. And that's what I'm going to need for him. Not just his corn, but someone, you know, last year we didn't have at the end of games that we had to do offense defense. And they're too small at times. So this year we have a team that, you know, we can switch 1 through 5 if we have to, and we can go big with Luke Fisher and Jamil and E. Cook and guys who can guard, you know, multiple positions. And, you know, with DJO and Dwight Bikes in the mix, that gives us a huge lineup for end of games. And you got to have Travis in there somewhere to hit an element in there. You need him in there to do it.
He's a closer, man. Travis is a closer.
You always need a closer.
Yeah, I just love the balance of your team. And I think that's why a lot of people, I mean, you guys obviously went to the final last year, and you know, you've been going deep in this tournament for a few years now, but you guys just seem like have pretty much check all the boxes. You've got shooters, you got guys who can defend, you got plenty of ball handlers, and you got some size with Fisher coming in. Just what can you say about the balance of your roster?
Yeah, I think that's what's important. A lot of people mess up with trying to do an all-star team, and everyone's like, hey, you need, you know, so-and-so, you need these players. And you want to make it the team balanced. So the Derek Wilsons of the world, those type of players balance your team. You know, the Jarvis Williams, guys who can do it, a little bit of everything but don't need the ball in their hand to be successful. I think those guys get overlooked by fans. But as coaches and former players, you appreciate guys that can do a little bit of everything and not demanding of having the ball in their hand.
So is there anyone that you don't put names out there, but is there anyone that you rejected from the team or like, chemistry or balance?
It's always, you know, 3 to 4, maybe 5 guys every year that, you know, you kind of trying to put the roster together that they just don't fit. And this year it happens a lot because they only give you a certain amount of people who can travel with you. So that kind of limits you of what you can do. So it was guys that played years past or, you know, guys that are new that want to play that you just don't have spots for them, unfortunately, because you need that good balance of people.
You mentioned Jarvis Williams. He's really probably the only guy on this roster that Marquette fans may not be familiar with because everyone else is either a Marquette alum or you got Elgin Cook who's played on the team the last few years. What can you tell me about Jarvis Williams? He's probably a new name to a lot of Marquette fans.
I mean, he's a dominant. He can do a little bit of everything. So, can't call him a poor man's anyone, but he reminds me of Elgin Cook. So when one comes out, the other one comes in. He does the same thing. He can guard multiple positions. He can shoot. He's very athletic. He can get to the basket with will. And he's more importantly, he's a great team player. He's a guy that came on last year because we liked how he played, but he barely played. And he had a great attitude. He helped with coaching. He helped with the scouting reports. He was a good teammate. And I think when you start to go into your bench, you need guys who are good teammates and not going to be pouting about the 5 to 10 minutes that they might get. So it's important to have that chemistry and that togetherness at the end of your bench, just as well as the first five that's out there.
So I guess a bit of a more serious question with the with the approach. I know the NBA is restarting. We talked about the bubble a little bit, and there's been some concerns about the bubble. But additionally, Kyrie Irving has kind of led some discussions around concern around the current political environment and the Black Lives Matter movement, and taking that seriously and trying not to divert attention away from that. How does the team, you know, decide not to answer it, whatever you feel comfortable. But how do you or the team kind of absorb that thought around, like, you guys are going to be putting, you know, it is going to be a distraction in a good sense away from some of the other things that are going on. But it also could represent a distraction from some negative things going on that we really should be paying attention to. Right. How do you kind of, like, adapt that within your mindset of as you're going into this tournament?
Yeah, you know, Phil, you got to have a balance to it because we're the first kind of sports to come back. And we don't want to be a distraction, but we also want to use our voices in the right way. I think the platform that we do have is important to utilize our voice and to let people know what we stand for, who we are as a university, who we are as people. I think that gives us a chance to do that with TBT because honestly, you know, the world needs to hear from, you know, different people that have great opinions on what's going on. And sometimes, some people shy away, don't want to do it, but some people do. And I think this is a great platform for anyone who wants to, you know, speak on injustices or politics or anything of that nature that's going on, the pandemic. I think this is something that's needed in our sports world and in the world period that we can lean on. I don't think it'll be a distraction at all. I think if anything, it can move the voice forward and talk more about these athletes, the NBA. They got, you know, these players that are great with everything, not just basketball players, but different platforms that they use their voice. And I think that was important for them, if they do decide to come back, is if they do come back, have the players, you know, use their voice more and not get blackballed if they do speak up more, which happened in the 90s, which happened, you know, in NFL. But if they do come back, if guys can voice their opinion a little bit more and give their perspective on being an African-American in this country, I think that'll be a huge step going forward.
No, it makes sense. I mean, it's a tough environment to navigate, right? Like, you want to be true to yourself and speak to your beliefs and balance it with the teammates. It's another level of chemistry to kind of take into account as far as the team, right? You might have some folks that are more or less comfortable, less comfortable, more vocal, less vocal, and how do you balance that? So it's an interesting challenge.
It is a very interesting challenge, but I think as long as, you know, you have a team full of guys who are focused on one goal, the goal is to go to TBT and trying to win and becoming a family. I think that's why you have training camps and get guys in early to create a bond. Because you got three or four different eras of Marquette basketball trying to have one common goal. I think long as you have that at the forefront, I think that's the biggest challenges is keeping that at the forefront, but also talking about everything else that's going on. Because sometimes it's damn if you do, damn if you don't. If you speak on it, you know, great job. If you don't, you looked at it, you know, like you're part of the problem. So, you know, we want guys to be comfortable doing it if they want to. But if they don't, we still got a goal in mind that we're trying to achieve, and we're brothers regardless if you speak on it or not.
Great. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah,
Joe, what can you say about that brotherhood? That's one thing that I think I love about the Golden Eagle squad, because it is mostly an alumni squad. Most of you guys know each other.
Yeah.
You either played together at Marquette or just met each other through Marquette networking. And that must make the team so special, is that it's kind of a reunion, some reunion of sorts.
It is. It is. And it started, you know, maybe like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I think Wojo brought in guys that played overseas and he had like a training camp. This is before TBT. I think the next year we did TBT. But he would bring guys in, and it turned into one big alumni, you know, weekend around the, I think around the barbecue, the Buzz barbecue. Then Ojo started to get the barbecue as well. I think that's what happened. Let me get this dog out here.
Fine, he's a
fan. We have another guest on the podcast.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's what just makes it just so fun, is just like, you know, to see, because most of us, you know, we're not get a chance to watch like European basketball, you know, like we get to see, we get to see Travis Diener play again. We get to see Darius Johnson Odom play again, because we love watching you guys when you were in Marquette uniforms. And, you know, and I think one thing this tournament does is highlight the fact that there are so many good basketball players who are not NBA players. Like, just because you're not in the NBA doesn't mean you're not a good player. I mean, there's a lot of really good talent in this thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you just go down the rosters of, let's just say all the teams that got a bye. I mean, just look at that, the talent, or teams like a Team Hines that we had to play last year. I mean, it's just incredible talented players. But it also tells you how fortunate you have to be to get to that stage of the NBA. And with good luck and good fortune to have a long career there. And, you know, we have, you know, 4 or 5 guys on our roster that had some NBA spots. So it's very challenging to get to that point. But like you said, it's just a, you know, it's a global game now, and, you know, guys can play into their 40s if they're good. And that's what you're starting to see more of, guys playing longer and longer.
So I guess from a coaching perspective, I know you've done AAU for a number of years, right? And stuff like that. So how does, and maybe you don't even notice the difference, but how is it different, your reps as a, I'll say, a regular coach, versus a coach trying to put together a team that's trying to go win $1 million. Like that seems like the urgency is a little bit different. And granted, yeah, maybe it's similar to when you played as a player in college, but how do you kind of adjust to that? Hey, we can go win some money for our players, and there's
yeah,
a lot more pressure there, I would think.
Yeah, it's a lot more pressure, but at the same time, it's a pressure to know that if you prepare the right way, you can live with the outcome. I think that's something that we try to preach is, hey guys, we can't control what might happen in the game, but we can control our work ethic. So I think that's something that has been very key for us is we have guys that play for Coach Kareem. We got guys that play for Coach Buzz and Wojo. So we come from a culture of work. And that's what I always preach to the guys is regardless of who's out there playing, who's not, let's just play hard and play the right way.
And it does seem, I got to ask this because the TBT does seem to keep making announcements. Is your roster complete? Or are there any surprises coming down the road?
Yeah, we're not complete yet. I think, you know, we got Mo Charlo, who played last year with us. Okay. He had the blonde streak in his hair. Okay. And, you know, he's another guy who's 6'8", 6'9", who can guard multiple positions. And that's what I need. I need guys who can guard multiple positions. There's not a lot of flaws that we did have last year. But I would say that might have been the one that caught up to us at the end where some of the Ohio State guys can just, you know, isolate on the elbows. And, you know, we might have a guy that's, you know, 3-4 inches smaller than him trying to defend them. Played in our favor on that one side, but it hurt us on the other side. So we just want to recruit guys that have who can play multiple positions and who can do a lot on the court.
So this is kind of the Buzz Williams switchable school of thought.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you prepare the guys the right way. Like you said, Phil, that I coach all year round. So, you know, I coach girls, I coach guys. So when I get into coach mode, it doesn't matter who's in front of me. And I can just, you know, help the curve a little bit. And that's what helps us. We switch defenses. We play different styles of play. So it's hard to prepare in 2 weeks of what we're going to do because we have the core guys always coming back every year. So we don't start over every year where a lot of teams do.
Right. Right. That makes sense. Do you guys, you mentioned kind of the different eras that, that the players on the team, the Buzz, the Kareem, the Wojo era, are there any discussions of which coach was better, which era was better? How, like, do you guys get into some of those friendly debates around?
Not really. You know, sometimes you get in more, you know, personal debates as far as who had a better career. No one really talks about, you know, the coaching because every coach was different. You know, Kareem was hard on us, but he was a great X and O guy. Buzz was a, you know, people's coach, you know, and I would say Wojo's kind of in the middle of both. So I think that was, you know, the chance for all of us is to say we play for, you know, three different style of coaches with the same type of leadership that we're all trying to bring to our everyday life. Now, you always appreciate your coaches more after you're done than when you're going through it. And I think those are the conversations we have the most is how crazy our coaches was.
One follow-up to that. What's the one thing you would say as a coach now, what did you kind of take away from your time with Kareem? Like, is there a thing you emulate or have repeated from his time?
Yeah, I think everyone, you know, I played 11 years overseas and I'm lucky enough to have a handful of great coaches, even from high school on. Both of my coaches in high school was Hall of Famers in Illinois. So I just learned from a lot of coaches. And what I learned from Kareem is he was always prepared. No one was more prepared than he was as far as his players and the other team is concerned and scouting. And he has so many plays. That, you know, it can be the same play but have 15 options with the same play. So that's some of the things that I learned from him is never being outthought by the other coach and always have a step ahead of preparing. I think that was one of the main things I learned from him is being able to switch up, have your core principles, but it's okay to switch up sometimes if you have to. And I think some coaches nowadays, they get caught up in just their system and only their system works and they don't like to adjust. Where I'm a little bit different, where I can adjust, you know, of who we're playing. So if my system is not good against one team, all right, well, we're going to try this 1-3-1 against this team, even though we don't do it a lot. But you got to switch it up just based on the team you had. And I think Kareem did a great job of that.
Yeah, speaking of your time at Marquette, Joe, I mean, you were really there at a great time. I mean, you come in as a freshman, yeah. You get to go to a Final Four, play with a future Hall of Famer. And, you know, your last year, you're basically kind of ushering in. You were in Novak and Grimm were the seniors on when that next crop came in with James McNeil and Matthews. And just what do you take away from that time in Marquette? Because it was really a heck of an era that you played.
Yeah, yeah, it was. I think looking back now on it, you can call that era that I played in probably is the best era since the 70s that we kind of had. My time there, you know, all-time leader in games played. Me and Novak, we left out playing the most games. We didn't miss games. And that just – we just had different styles where, you know, one year I had to play point guard, you know, because Travis got hurt. I think we were like 16 or 17-1 when Travis got hurt my junior year. And we end up like 19-12. You know, like we couldn't figure it out after our point guard went out and I got thrown in the mix, you know, to try to do that. And that's just not who I was. But it helped me for the next year. You know, my senior year, I was the backup point after I came out to Dominic James. So that kind of full circle, you know, that's why I think of my time in Marquette is I played with unbelievable talent, guys that played in the NBA and had successful careers. But also the guys that came in, you know, my senior year, I think it was like 8 to 10 straight years. After that, we went to the tournament. So it just ushered in a new era, you know, from 06 on to, you know, Buzz's last year. I think the team made, you know, the year. So it was just, you want to leave it the way you came in. And that was important for us as seniors.
Yeah, that 2005 year, wasn't that – that was also the – when Travis went down, that was the experiment of – it was future looking. We didn't know it at the time, but didn't – wasn't there a Marcus Jackson point forward experiment?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was in there as well. And we went to St. Louis, I'll never forget. And guys, we had like 4 or 5 guys sick that game. And it all had to be the starters. Most of the starters were sick with the flu, and Travis is out. You know, so guys, it was the lowest scoring game. It was like 35-40. You know, we end up winning. But guys are taking turns, bringing the ball up the court. It's like, this is not what we want to do.
You know? Yeah.
And everyone's just dead tired. But, you know, Marcus did a great job. That's one of his skill sets is really good at, is being a point forward. And we knew at that time the other center on the other team is not going to pick up full court. So, you know, we can throw it back to him. He can get us in a set play, and that just helped everyone as well because he was a great rebounder. He can get it and go, and that's what we needed.
Yeah, I can attest. He's still physically intimidating. He actually goes to the gym where I go, and I see him there from time to time. And I never have the guts to go up and introduce myself because I'm like, okay.
Yeah, he's at the Princeton Club. Yeah. He goes there. Yeah. And,
yeah, you know, it's what we refer to as the Beautiful People's Club because they're not me, but there are
a ton. How'd you get in?
Like everybody's wearing makeup and dressed.
But how did Marcus get in? Marcus is not.
I think he intimidated his way in. I think he kind of went, listen, I want to come in. Can I? And he got in. So
that sounds about right. That's about right.
Yeah.
And Marcus played in this thing a few years ago, right? When you did, I want
to say. Yeah, he played one of the years with us. I think that's the year we made it to the Sweet 16. We lost to Bradley. And yeah, he was there and he played well too. I mean, a guy that's what I was talking about. Those intangible guys, those are the guys you need that don't need the ball. They're going to play their role. They're not going to pout about their minutes played or anything like that. So you need those type of guys.
That's an Al McGuire thing. He said, you know, you need a few stars, but you need some guys who can fill those roles too, because.
Oh, you do, you know, and that's what we kind of did this year. We got DJO and Bikes. They can get buckets from anywhere, you know, and you got Jamil, you know, who can score from anywhere. And then you got a lot of guys like Diener, who's just the leader of the group. And, you know, Luke Fisher, who can score around the rim and be a rim protector. I think his addition is going to be huge for the team. But like you say, you need two or three guys who can get their own buckets when you need it and everyone else to kind of fill in the gap.
Well, you certainly have that, Joey. I mean, you guys got a good team. You got as good a chance to win this thing as anybody. I know you guys have been close the last few years.
Yep.
So, I mean, we just want to say thanks for coming on, first of all, but also good luck in this tournament. Stay safe there. Hey, man, good luck. I hope you guys win the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun. And like I said, regardless of the outcome, it's a brotherhood, and guys like to be around and be around each other each year, and this gives us an excuse to do it.
And I think I speak on behalf of all fans. Just thank you guys for doing this because we enjoy watching. It's fun for us. So we appreciate all you guys. I mean, you guys don't have to do this.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You do this because you enjoy it. And obviously you're trying to win some money, but you still don't have to do it.
Right.
But we enjoy watching. It's like a chance for some nostalgia and talk about the good old days of Marquette basketball that we remember that, you know, when you guys were playing and, you know, the players we've loved from the past. So on behalf of all Marquette fans, thank you and all your teammates for doing this because we enjoy it.
Oh, no problem, Joe. Thanks. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, glad to. And we're looking forward to next year when hopefully everything's better and you can have some games at the Owl again. And my son loves coming to he'll be five then, and he just loves coming to the games and watching you guys play. So
yeah,
it's gonna be great next year. This year we win it all. Next year we'll win.
And maybe next year you can get a certain former teammate of yours who's heading to the Hall of Fame and get him to sign up for this thing. I know you guys get joked about that all the time. I don't know if Dwayne would ever do it.
Oh yeah, And we had conversations with him, you know, and I was texting them back and forth. It's just, you know, during this time, it's just hard to have a Hall of Famer stay in a hotel for. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think any Hall of Famer would ever do this. With all due respect to TBP, Dwayne, I don't know if Dwayne needs it, but he'll be pulling for you guys like the rest of us.
Absolutely.
Well, and I don't know that splitting $1 million like 16 ways really moves the needle for Dwayne Wade right now.
Right. We need his cut. He doesn't need it.
Yeah. So, well, thanks, Joe. I really appreciate it.
All right. Yeah, thanks, no problem, Joe. Good luck, man. Yeah, thank you. Bye.
All right, so thanks very much to Joe Chapman for joining us. It was great to talk with Joe. You know, I'm sure many of you remember him from his playing days. I noticed how he kind of dropped in there. Hey, I've got the, got the record for games played. He kind of slipped that in there.
Yeah.
But he did play a lot. He had a great career for Marquette. He went to a Final Four, and, you know, he was part of the first team to play in the Big East, and he's done a great job as the coach of Golden Eagles alumni squad. And I hope they win the whole thing, and I think they got a great chance to.
Yeah, I mean, we talked it a little bit before the interview with Joe, but, you know, I think one of the big things to take away from Joe, what Joe had to say was a lot of roster flexibility, a lot of ability to kind of adapt to what the other teams, right? Like, it's a relatively small tournament, so you kind of know what you're going up against, but depending on how the matchups shake up, Mr. Chapman there has the ability to flex his roster, go defensive, go offensive, change styles with any team. And again, like we said before the interview, the kind of the returning core that's got experience, you know, as I referred to him in that interview, Mr. Elam ending, Travis Diener coming back, right? That practical experience matters. I mean, Joe's got, I guess I didn't even really think about it. Joe's got, what, 11 years of professional experience playing, and then, you know, all his AAU coaching plus coaching in these tournaments. You know, there's a lot of teams that you know, are kind of doing this not necessarily on a whim, but not nearly with that breadth of experience and capability. So I think their odds look good to go certainly deep. And who knows? I think this might be the year.
Hopefully so. So, you know, good luck to them. And, you know, we do enjoy watching them. And hope they're all, you know, everybody's able to stay safe and finish the tournament in its entirety. And they're able to do it without incident. But and hope that goes well. But I know they're taking every precaution to do exactly that. And that kind of leads me to our next point, as we talk about the Marquette University Golden Eagles, that, you know, the season, we hope there's going to be a season. We are praying there's going to be a season, but we don't know for certain, because I think there's still plenty of uncertainty out there as, you know, coronavirus cases are on the rise. We don't know, you know, doesn't appear there would be able to be fans, at least not right away, which creates a revenue issue. And I don't know, how are you feeling as far as the possibility of a season happening, Phil?
I think, given the pressures and I think the revenue is absolutely going to matter for a university like Marquette, who, you know, whose athletic department depends on that revenue. I think a season in some form is going to take place, but only if, like, students themselves are returning back. Like, I don't know, you know, how you could have any kind of season where the student athletes are present, but the, you know, the non-athlete students are not. That just, man, that looks really bad optically.
You can't have student athletes working out and traveling the country if the campus is closed. I just can't see how you could do that.
Right. And Marquette's officially announced that the first semester will start 2 weeks early with in-person students or in-person attendance. They're going to do a mix of you know, classes in person and then even doing some virtual when you're on campus, you know, from a dorm or whatever. But that the in-person portion of the semester will end at Thanksgiving and then essentially finals or whatever will be virtual after that. But it's interesting that timing because the basketball season nominally, you know, practices start up in October. Theoretically, they're practicing now. And then the regular season kicks off in early to mid-November, which, you know, neither of us have stayed in a Holiday Inn Express lately that I'm aware of, and nor are we any kind of medical doctor. But based on what we know about coronavirus and the seasonality of it or whatever, November seems like a prime time when such a virus might come back. And putting a bunch of kids in a tight space to work out and practice and play basketball, it seems like it's going to be tough. I think there's going to be a lot of effort made to do it, but it's going to be close.
Yeah, to me, I've tried to, you know, I know I normally play the pessimistic one on this podcast, and I've tried to be as optimistic as I can when it comes to coronavirus and things coming back, and I've always been hopeful that we would somehow get past this. But as, you know, the months continue to peel off the calendar, and the numbers nationwide are what they are, it's just like, to me, it just seems so difficult without some kind of medical breakthrough that really changes the way we treat coronavirus, the way we, you know, the way we handle coronavirus, the way we handle patients, how many people survive it, how many people are hospitalized, and, you know, obviously the ultimate goal is a vaccine, and Dr. Fauci has said we're going to have one by the end of the year or early 2021, but if we have one, does that mean everyone in America who needs one can get one, like, by Christmas or New Year's Day? I don't think it's going to happen that quick. I mean, you can't get 300 something million people vaccinated in a week. It takes, you know, it's going to take some time, but if I had to like place my chips on something, whether season on schedule, played in its entirety, season canceled or season moved, I would put my chips on season moved. Like Everything shifts back to January when people are saying we will have a vaccine. Or, you know, Dr. Fauci said, and others have said, you know, vaccines coming late 2020 or early 2021, then at least you can get the people who need vaccinations, whether it's coaches and players or students or whoever, and maybe a season is safer and more feasible, and maybe you could even have fans in the stands and make some kind of money. That would just be, again, this is me just a caveman lawyer giving my take on it, but that seems likely to me. If your options are play a season with no fans that could possibly get postponed, or just push it back, that and maybe you will be able to have some fans, then maybe delaying it a few months is on the table. But I have no idea. To me, it's hard for me to believe that everything, including football, is starting on schedule and will be played without incident.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing is, I agree with you. I think the bet is going to be to move the season back some to buy space. I mean, we'll have, thankfully for being a basketball-only school, we'll have a clear idea of what football is going to do, college football is going to do, right? Now, the one caveat is college football is typically played in outdoor state arenas, which theoretically are safer than, you know, say the Fiserv Forum or the Al McGuire Center or what have you, right, where you're enclosed in close proximity and stuff. It's easier to space in a football stadium than it is in maybe a basketball arena, et cetera. So we'll have some idea of where colleges are going to go based on the football. I do think it's going to be interesting, right, because I think the season moves back, but it only moves back if the colleges can get some sort of certainty that in-person attendance will be viable, right? Like, there's no doubt they want to preserve the media contracts and deliver product, right? That's 90% of why the NBA is going into the bubble for this season, is they want to preserve their media contracts, and you know, the regional service or regional sports league providers have contracts with the NBA, and they have to get so many games out to get the money that the RSPs have provided and whatnot. So the universities are going to want to get those contracts protected, but the majority of their revenue is either in-person attendance, concessions, and or like the tournaments, right? So like, we know this for a fact, Marquette took a $15 million hit because the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament did not occur, right? So having the tournaments or having the season is going to be important to preserve some revenue, but the in-person revenue, that may be a linchpin. And if they don't, I guess I don't know this for a fact, but if they can't get some form of gate ticket for this, there may be a, you know, there may be an urgency to cancel the season altogether. One, to preserve health, and two, to avoid some pretty impactful financial issues. You know.
Yeah, and that's concerning. But you know, they're going to have to make those decisions when we get there. And you know, I was thinking the other day, wouldn't it be like, it'd be interesting if, say, they do a delayed season and start in January, if because some dates are already set on the calendar, instead of having to move everything back, what if the season is essentially played backwards, where you start with Big East play and you play your entire conference schedule into March, but then you've got to play all your non-conference games, which would be weird for those one-bid leagues, because then they don't have really anything to gain, because they've got their tournament set up as far as seeding, but then they're just going to go out and get beat down by the big schools. But then for, you know, schools like, say, Marquette, if you've played your Big East season, now you're trying to play for seeding and trying to boost your conference RPI by playing outside of conference. So, in other words, all the games that would have been scheduled in November and December, they move sometime March, April, whereas all your conference games that were scheduled for January and February are played as scheduled. That would be an interesting way to play the season.
I think it would, not only would it be interesting, and the only caveat I would put on that is I could see like the regular season conference schedule, then the non-conference schedule, and then the conference tournaments kind of pushed back, right? Like, so to your point, so you can kind of preserve that automatic qualifier piece till the very end of the season. I don't know if that works with how that'll work with leases at the various arenas, right? Like Madison right. Square Garden, how willing are they gonna let the Big East move their tournament instead of early March to, let's say, early May, right? But I think what would be really interesting and compelling is, and it also makes a lot of logical sense from a logistics standpoint, is, you know, when you're playing in conference, you've got a relatively set pattern of travel, right? And you're just traveling amongst the teams that are in your conference and amongst a fixed set of destinations. Whereas the non-conference, right, like you've got those all over the place. You know, you could be going anywhere, especially the bye games. Those teams are flying in from all over the place, and there's a lot of mingling. Plus you have the non-conference tournaments, right, that are in the Bahamas and, you know.
Yeah, imagine going to Maui in March.
Right, exactly. But, like, so you can mix – so moving the non-conference to – not only from a scheduling standpoint, but from a, like, a health standpoint makes some sense in terms of minimizing travel and logistics. And it essentially buys the season some more time to get, you know, some of those – safety measures in place, or a vaccine, or better treatments, or whatever. I mean, something could happen between now and November that kind of flips all this conversation on its head. But I think it's safe to say that this season will not go on as we have thought about it in the past, right? It's highly unlikely fans are going to be in attendance.
Right.
It's highly unlikely that the schedule is going to remain unmodified in some capacity. And I think we just got to, you know, come to terms with that. I'll say this as an aside. Marquette typically sends out renewal notices for season tickets in May. May has come and gone without a notification. So I think Marquette is kind of playing the long game here and waiting as long as they can before they have to make any decisions and get fans to make any kind of commitment. But that's going to, you know, and Marquette just announced some wage cuts to staff, as well as some layoffs and hiring freezes and stuff like that. So Marquette's making provisions for the long financial haul, and I think the basketball season is going to see some effect of that for sure.
Yeah, who knows? Something you had brought up off air, Phil, is if they're not going to have you'd said if they're not going to have fans, maybe playing games in the Al McGuire Center becomes an option.
Right. Yeah, it would be a cool venue, and that's one of the things, right? Like even the NBA had talked about, or I had heard some commentary around it, like if the NBA is going to play, put them in high school gyms, right? It narrows the amount of, you can have better camera angles, you don't have to worry about where fans are, you don't have to worry about, the noise and stuff. So like if Marquette is playing only in without in-person attendance, can you move it to the Owl one to just make a better product as opposed to playing in an empty Fiserv Forum? And two, this comes down the contract side, can Marquette avoid some of the costs of the lease in the Fiserv and play in the Al McGuire, where it's presumably under their own control and a cheaper venue to host, non-attended games?
Yeah, that may be a legal battle above my pay grade.
Right.
It's something I'm sure the university, I'm sure, is kicking around all kinds of options to have a season that is safe and as financially feasible as possible. So I guess we'll see where it goes from there. But, over the past few weeks, Phil, we have learned some things about what Marquette's going to look like whenever they do play a game again. I'd say the most recent thing is this Coaches for Action panel that was started. Dwayne Killings, Marquette, one of Marquette's assistants, he and basically every minority assistant coach in the Big East got together and formed this thing, and they have, basically a lot of initiatives in this group that they've got together, which, of course, it circles around the Black Lives Matter movement, which, of course, is the other big thing going on in America right now, along with the coronavirus. And there are a lot of goals here that they're trying to achieve a lot of good. And I think it's a pretty cool thing. If you've read up on it, it's a thing that's kind of been going around the internet, and I'm sure you can find it online, our articles detailing all of their initiatives, but it is kind of a cool thing that Coach Killings and Justin Gainey is also a part of it, that all the other assistant coaches of color in the Big East have gotten together and organized.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I mean, as a Marquette fan and a Marquette alum, I'm based on the articles, right? Like, I don't have any inside knowledge. It sounds like Dwayne Killings kind of initiated all this and kind of kicked off the organization. It makes you really proud of the organization stepping up in this moment. I think to tie it back to the, and I'm sure we have some people that listen to the podcast that are fans and not necessarily alumni and whatnot, but I think it ties back to the kind of the Cura Personalis, motto of kind of the university and looking after the whole person and making an impact. And quite frankly, the Jesuits have a long history of social justice. So I think it's good. Quite frankly, it's fantastic that Coach Killings is kind of leading this charge, and that all of the, obviously they got support from the head coaches. They, the interview I read, Val Ackerman, the Big East commissioner, was kind of really pushing and saying, hey, look, don't think of this as, small things. Think big, right? What can we be? How can we be transformative? How can we do bigger and better things? Let's not just tackle one small thing. So I think that's really impressive and really proud. One of the big things, they're going to wear the Black Lives Matter patch on the uniform, which is important. I think what's going to be interesting in this, and I think neither you or I mean, we're not qualified to talk about viruses. We're barely qualified to talk about basketball. I'm not sure that we're in any way qualified to talk about the Black Lives Matter moment. But what I think is important is that it's surfacing and it's getting talked about in our community as an alumni group, as a fan group. It's being surfaced, right? I think back to when the whole Colin Kaepernick situation came up, and I remember thinking, well, I wonder what's going to happen if, Marquette student athletes decide to take a similar stand as Colin Kaepernick. And it was it was only a couple of years ago, but it feels like a totally different era, right? Where there was, where I was a little bit more nervous about how that might have been received. But I think now, like, surfacing this in very positive and informative ways, I think is going to be really well served. And this is a bit of a soliloquy, but like, I'm really proud of the moment and the players, you know, Kobe McEwen, Theo John, Sakara Annam stepped up and participated in some of the Black Lives Matter protests and kind of made their opinions heard. And I think that's important to support. And so I think it's great that it's coming up. I think it's a tough conversation to have, especially in a basketball podcast, but I think it's one that's important. I don't know. How do you feel about it, Jim?
I feel like, you know, like going back to what you said about, are you and I qualified to talk about it? No, we are not experts on the topic, but I think the point of this thing is that the discussion needs to continue.
Yeah.
And that we can't just like get through, you know, the month of June and the protests slow down and we say, well, thankfully that's over. That's not what we want to happen. We want this discussion and this awareness of social injustice and racial inequality and systemic racism to continue to be on people's minds so that maybe people who are uncomfortable talking about it can at least be aware of it and maybe get to the point where they can say something or do something or recognize where there is injustice or at least be knowledgeable of white privilege and what that is and maybe what you can do to help people who do not have the same opportunities that you and I do. You know, granted, you and I will never know exactly what it is like to be a black person and the struggles that they go through and the small biases that they go through every day that you and I would never really understand. And yeah, do I completely understand what people of color go through? No, but I think it's a matter of acknowledging that there are issues that need to be addressed and to be aware of them and to do your part in one way or another, whether that is volunteering, whether that is speaking, whether that is if you own a business or work at a business where you're in a position to hire people, to consider more people of color, where, you know, historically people in power who are white tend to hire white people. And that's kind of what one of the things this you know, group does want to fight for is, you know, more opportunities for people of color. That's something that sports leagues have struggled with for a while, most notably the NFL, but I think basketball and really all sports don't have many coaches, managers of color, and creating more opportunities for minority coaches. And yeah, by having the Black Lives Matter movement on patches this year, that kind of assures that the discussion won't stop and the awareness won't stop. So it'll always be on the jerseys. At least it's planned through this year. I don't know if it's going to be in perpetuity or whatever, but it's going to be at least for a year. So it's acknowledging that, you know, especially because, you know, a lot of college basketball players are black, and letting these players know that we are behind you and we support you, but also letting players who maybe not be aware of the issues of social injustice and systemic racism to kind of make them more aware and make them and help them say, look, you can be a difference. You have a platform here in college basketball. So this group that Coach Killings and others have started, I think it can do a lot of good by just continuing the conversation and making it kind of forcing people who are uncomfortable talking about it to at least be aware of it and maybe get to the point where they can say something or be vocal or just be supportive of people who are more vocal and passionate about it.
Absolutely. And I think the key, and we heard it in the interview with Joe Chapman, right, around the platform, and you said platform multiple times. And I think that's exactly right. Like, this is giving, and it's similar in concept. You know, you and I have talked about in the podcast around the name, image, and likeness efforts, right? That hey, these players should be able to profit over off their likeness outside of the structure of their scholarships. You know what else the players should be able to do? They should be able to use the platform that's given to them to advocate for social change. In this case, it's in the form of Black Lives Matter, but we should be enabling and encouraging and you know, part of this is players are going to get some of this stuff wrong. Coaches are going to get some of this wrong. We also have to create an environment where somebody can say something wrong or say something inarticulate, I'm well known for saying inarticulate things, right? But like,
same,
you know, create a structure and support the players in their advocacy for, in this case, social change, but also support them as they make stumbles, right? Like as they're 18 to 22 year old kids. And I think we need to encourage them to speak out, to seek change where change is appropriate, to seek justice where it's appropriate, but also kind of wrap them in a support model that enables them to be imperfect at times. And that's, I think, what is embodied in some of this kind of platform stuff. Create an area for a safe space, right? And I know that gets kind of eye rolls out of people, but I mean it in a figurative sense, right? Create this safe place for players and coaches to speak up and engage the fan bases and the wider audiences, and if nothing else, at least hear it out. Right. I think
and just encourage a kid who may be shy to say something, say like, you know, some of these black kids may look in the crowd and see a, you know, 90% white crowd and say, you know, if I say something, these fans may not like it. Encourage them that we are behind you and right. that if you want to say something and if you want to demonstrate or say something again, you know, in the vein of social justice, that we are behind you, and to know that they do have a family around them that supports their beliefs and what they want to speak for and what they want to stand for.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, as we kind of awkwardly transition to basketball itself, another piece of news we got in the past week was we now know that DJ Carton is going to be eligible for this season, if there is one. And that kind of changes things a little bit for me, Phil, to know that Marquette is going to have a talented, dynamic guard added to this backcourt. You know, he was a highly recruited kid before he went to Ohio State, and he did well there for them, coming off the bench and playing a lot of minutes. And I think he's immediately one of the best players on this team. And I think, I'm not saying it makes them a Big East contender or anything, but it at least makes me think Marquette is going to be a little more interesting to watch this year than maybe I would have thought with the roster as it was a month ago.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, we'll see, you know, we always live in this bubble of in the summer of very positive expectations based on a small sample size of evidence, right? But DJ Carton, having said that, seems like he's kind of the answer to some of the ails that we had surfaced with his team, right? Like DJ Carton gives you a primary ball handler with we can crap on the Big Ten all we want, but that's a very good conference, a lot of competition there. So this isn't a case where we're transferring someone from a low tier conference up to the big boy conference, right? He's got big boy conference experience. He can handle the ball, solve some of the issues we see in the backcourt. So I think this makes the team, I mean, your role is pessimistic, mine's optimistic. I'm not all the way back to optimistic, Phil, but it certainly makes this team, I think, much more watchable and much, the ceiling gets higher, like, automatically because of the promise of DJ Carton.
Yeah, because when he's your lead guard as opposed to, you know, McEwen, who's going to be coming off hand surgery. I don't know if he's even been able to have that surgery or not yet. He was scheduled for it. But, you know, obviously surgeries have kind of been pushed back in some parts of the country because of hospitals being, you know, so crowded. But and, you know, Greg Elliott, who has had his health issues, and then Samir Torrance, who is a talented kid, but just in his second season, didn't play a whole lot last year. So I think he brings a certain level of leadership and athleticism and explosiveness. He's a, you know, pretty good shooter. And I think just with him as your lead guard, it just opens up things for everyone else. So, you don't have to depend on I think a backcourt with Kobe McEwen as your lead guard could have been troublesome based on what we saw last year. He struggled with a shot. He struggled with turnovers. Hopefully maybe that hand surgery can maybe bring some of his confidence back. But I think having Carton in the backcourt, maybe pushing Kobe off the ball, maybe helps him to become a better player. And, you know, we'll see how the rest of the roster shakes out and who's going to be getting the rest of the minutes, but you know, you can just go ahead and put it in pen. DJ Carton, I mean, he's your starting point guard.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it gives more roster flexibility, right? He's going to be the starting point guard. You can spell him some with Kobe McEwen or Greg Elliott potentially or whatever, but it just gives more lineup adaptions that Wojo wouldn't have had with, you know, the backcourt without a DJ Carton being eligible. The backcourt was pretty much fixed, and it not fixed in a great way, right? Like fixed in okay, well, we know what this is.
Yeah, like this is what we're rolling with.
Right. You know, so I think there is, I'd be hard pressed to find any reason why this is nothing but fantastic news. And I'm curious to see, how DJ Carton does as a distributor in the offense that Wojo has generally run, and or whether Wojo changes the offense to reflect the personnel he has.
Yeah, because, you know, he also lost Brendan Bailey. Brendan Bailey elected to pursue a professional career. He put his name in the NBA draft, and I guess the feedback he got basically was, look, you're going to be playing overseas either now or playing overseas in 2 years when you're 25. So, you know, they basically told me he's probably not going to develop into an NBA prospect at Marquette. So he decided, look, I'm just going to go play overseas and make money while I can. So good luck to him. But, you know, I think that creates a void in the starting lineup. But I think it's a spot that you can replace him, you know, from a statistical standpoint. I think it's an opportunity for Jamal Cain to really step into that three spot and really kind of get every opportunity that maybe he's kind of never really has, because he's always had a guy or two in front of him. Right,
like right.
He's always been a spot or two behind on the depth chart, but now that spot is his, and I hope he makes the most of it.
Yeah, well, and I mean, there's some opportunities across the board. I think Jamal Cain is the most obvious, right, in taking those minutes from Brendan Bailey, and I would certainly say Bailey and Cain both showed great promise or great peaks in times, but they also had, you know, very low moments as well. So it's going to be a question of, can Cain, you know, get rid of the low and maintain the high? But then we're also going to have opportunities like Justin Lewis, right? And this is the, you know, I spoke to the expectation or the promise of great based on little or no evidence, right? By all accounts, Justin Lewis is a highly skilled and promising player coming in. He can take some of the minutes at the 3/4. You know, whatever Oso Igodoro is going to do he's probably going to play primarily more the 4, right? Do we go to, you know, can Dawson Garcia come slide down and play even a little bit of 3 in some sort of super big lineup or something like that? So there's some, like I said, some limited evidence, but high promise opportunities here as a result of Brendan kind of clearing some depth space for some guys to step up and for DJ Carton being eligible.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, who knows? Maybe you may see some 3-guard sets depending on how Torrance and Elliott come along. And then we've also got Dexter Cano, who is kind of an unknown. We'll see how that all shakes out. But yeah, I think, you know, production wise, I think Cain could probably give you just about everything that Bailey could, honestly.
Right.
Bailey averaged 7 points and 5 boards a game last year. Cain averaged 5 points and 4 boards a game, and in fewer minutes.
Right.
So I think Cain could step into that role and hopefully he can thrive. And so he's a guy I'm pulling for this year. But yeah, Wojo will have some options. Maybe he probably could use another true big guy to back up Theo John, but I think that's probably, now as the roster shapes up, that's probably going to fall on, you know, Garcia and Lewis. They're just going to have to kind of play as smaller fives at times when Theo's out of there.
Right.
That's just something Wojo's going to have to work with.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting. It gives, when Theo's not in there, it gives them the opportunity to play kind of a 5-wide offense, right? That's somewhat in vogue. So that'll be interesting. I think Cain, kind of tying that out a little bit, I think Cain offensively, I have zero worries. I think Cain could actually have surpassed Brendan Bailey on the offensive end this season, especially as he got more minutes. Where I'm a little concerned is on the defensive end. I think Kane has the ability on the defensive end, but I just Brendan Bailey was much more consistent in my mind than Jamal was on the defensive end. So I'm excited to see what Jamal can do defensively to earn that his keep.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, I guess we could break down the roster even further as we are assured that there is going to be a season and when that's going to happen. But we did want to check in with you mainly because we wanted to talk TBT with Joe Chapman. It was great to hear from him again. Thanks to Joe for calling in, and want to wish good luck to him and his team. And hopefully it's just the beginning of better news in this country as far as sports returning and us having something to watch other than, you know, just binging shows that we've been way behind on.
Right. Yeah. We've exercised the Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney Plus as much as possible. It's time to get some net new television to watch.
And hopefully this podcast was able to take up an hour of your time and help you pass the time. But, you know, as always, we thank you guys for checking in with us here on Scrambled Eggs. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post a podcast there. You can leave your comments there. Be sure to go to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well, if that's your thing. Phil, I don't know when we're going to pod again. Hopefully when we have some good news to report, and hopefully that's sooner rather than later. But stay safe out there, man. We'll check in again pretty soon.
Yeah, let's enjoy the basketball tournament, and maybe that'll be our next little thing to talk about when we're talking about our favorite ex-players getting $1 million.
Yeah, hey, go to thetournament.com. You might get a share, too. I think you can get like $100 if they win the whole thing.
It's not nothing, sure. Especially in these times.
I'll take anything. Even if we have to split it, you know, 10,000 ways and we all get $5, that's fine. Well, I'll take it. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Seashells and Balloons, everybody. Talk to you again soon.